Mandela Barnes was the guy to beat in the Democratic primary for governor. The former lieutenant governor is well known across Wisconsin, having narrowly lost a bid for U.S. Senate in 2022.
But the Democratic primary seems wide open now that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley rejoined the race with Governor Tony Evers' endorsement. That could cost Barnes votes in his hometown of Milwaukee.
We spoke with Barnes just before Evers' announcement about why Democrats should trust him again at the top of the ticket. Barnes also talked about the high cost of housing, possible pardons for protesters, and his best time in a marathon. I'm Scott Milfred. I'm the opinion editor for the State Journal.
And I'm Phil Hands. I'm the editorial cartoonist for the Wisconsin State Journal.
We are two-fifths of the Wisconsin State Journal editorial board.
The more likely to run a marathon, two-fifths.
You have.
I have. You have not, because you're a
whim. I'm just a 5K boy. Well, I have gone 10K.
Okay.
Mandela Barnes, welcome to Center Stage with Milfred and Hands. You're running for governor. Where are you at today?
Well, running for governor, yes. And I want to first thank you all so much for having me. I am currently here in Madison.
Oh, welcome to town.
Yeah, we could have done this in person.
Well, I'm at home too, so it doesn't matter.
We know you well, Mandela, of course, from being lieutenant governor, from being state lawmaker, especially from running for U.S. Senate. What have you been doing since you narrowly lost that race to Ron Johnson?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for bringing up the question. It has been a busy last few years, but now that I'm back in campaign mode, like, it's been a lot more relaxed there, I can say. But it was a lot of hard work at the same time. So immediately after the campaign, we obviously looked at some of the things that could have been done differently, looked at what some of our expectations were that may not have necessarily been met. And we figured, I didn't run just for myself to be elected U.S. Mm-hmm. Senator. I ran because things needed to change. And in order for things to change, we need to address it at a structural level. So I joined an organization called Power to the Polls. Power to the Polls is focused on engaging new and infrequent voters. Younger organization. By the time I came on board, it was like 9 months old. So I had a chance to do a total refresh, brought in a new executive director, and we led one of the largest independent voter mobilization efforts ever in this state. The largest that was particularly focused on Black voters. But our goal was new and infrequent voters, people who may show up for presidential here and there, but not necessarily for spring elections or midterms. And the work that we did in the city of Milwaukee in particular, but that work happened from Kenosha all the way up to Green Bay, helped result in Milwaukee having the highest voter turnout of the 50 largest cities in the entire country. Mm. Milwaukee saw an increase in voter participation where other major cities in swing states saw a decline. So your Detroit, Phoenix, Cincinnati, Cleveland, you name it, they reversed course and we pressed forward. And that's because organizing really works. That's what I've been involved in. That's how I got my start. And I still see myself as an organizer.
Okay. Are you banking on that high turnout in Milwaukee in this primary, given that that's your hometown, right?
So I don't bank on anything. I don't take a single vote for granted. But what I can say is even in the midterm election in 2022, again, a race that was decided by 1 point, I had more votes in the city of Milwaukee than anybody ever in a midterm election. I even got more votes than Tony out of the city of Milwaukee in 2022. Milwaukee is my own. And obviously I don't just assume that people are gonna vote for me because I'm from there. I'm ready to show up and earn every single vote this election cycle.
You were considered the front runner as this race got going. And it seems like the race is a little more wide open now, or at least is narrowing. Are you still the front runner in your mind?
Hey, regardless of what any poll says, even coming into this, I ignored that front runner label because if you come in declaring yourself a front runner, you're putting a big target on your back. And I'm focused on running a campaign that meets people where they are. And given, what I've been able to do in 2018 or even in 22, the foundation that we were able to lay, the infrastructure that we have, knowing what my base is with over 1.3 million votes 4 years ago, I have a unique opportunity that nobody else in this race has to go out and meet new people and add to that coalition. And that's what I've been focused on. And regardless if I was polling at first or last, it is going to be the same level of effort. I am going to work as if nobody has ever heard of me before.
So speaking of polls, there was a Democratic Party convention earlier this summer, and you finished sixth out of seven candidates, despite being one of the better known candidates in the race. Why do you think that poll went down the way it did?
I mean, that's a straw poll. we know that is the least scientific way to measure where a race is, because if straw polls are any indicator, we would never have Governor Doyle. We wouldn't have had Governor Evers. So that is how I look at the straw poll results.
What sets you apart in this race of the five candidates left?
Absolutely. I am the only candidate that is uniquely prepared for this moment that we're in. Being born and raised in the city of Milwaukee, one of our most challenged communities, being a proud product of Milwaukee Public Schools, having experienced some of the very best that the state has had to offer, but unfortunately, some of the worst and outcomes with people that were around me, even in my own personal life, you know, having moments in my adult life where I faced incredible uncertainty, being on unemployment, being on energy assistance, you know, using food share just to, you know, keep food on the table, right? Like, I've been through the difficult situations that so many people are experiencing. And I bring up, you know, this affordability crisis because it is new to a lot of people, but it's not new to our society. A lot of folks have been experiencing this crisis ever since they've come into adulthood, or even their entire lives for that matter. And I know what that feels like. I know what it means. And given the opportunities that I have had in my life, on the other side of things, having served in the assembly, having served as lieutenant governor, bringing these unique qualities that aren't often found in candidates, I've always saw fit to make sure that we are addressing root causes. And we are also leading with the voices who have been the most impacted, being able to be a part of that conversation and ultimately be a part of that decision-making. And when we look at how bad things have gotten, given the fact that Donald Trump is doing everything he can to destroy this country and Wisconsin feeling the brunt of that, we've had to take on Donald Trump before. I'm the only person who's ever run in a truly competitive election here in the state. And I'm taking my message from Milwaukee to Marshfield. I'm taking it from Beloit to Bayfield, all parts in between, because we have so much more in common. Nobody's traveled this state as much as I have, and bringing that unique experience from Milwaukee that's so often looked over because, you know, a lot of bad faith politicians want to give Milwaukee a bad name, but it is truly those very disparate living conditions that so many people are faced with that is all due to corporate greed. You know, I share the story about my grandfather moving to Milwaukee after serving the Navy during World War II and was able to walk in one day, effectively walk out 35, 40 years later, retire with relative comfort. He was able to create a middle-class foundation that I get to benefit from today. Now, unfortunately, that factory, like so many others across the state, doesn't exist anymore. And it's not as if people got tired of working. Those factories don't exist anymore because the executives and these corporations felt they can make more money by sending our good paying jobs overseas. That is a real experience that too many people have to deal with in all parts of Wisconsin. It is the same strategy and tactic that has destabilized rural economies, displacing our family farmers, and also ushering in, you know, this method, this era of corporate factory farming that makes it tough for our family farmers to compete, ultimately destabilizes rural economies and accumulates much more wealth at the top.
What makes you best to beat Tom Tiffany?
Well, I can say that I am the one person in this race who has pulled ahead in both the primary and the general. And in that matchup, I'm also the only person who's ever been tested. When I hate to go back to polls because I said whether I was in first or last, the work ethic is going to be the same. And that remains true. But what I will say is I am also the only person who has faced a barrage of negative attacks. Nobody else running right now has faced any commercials aired against them. There was $50 million in super PAC spending against me, not including money directly from my opponent's candidate committee. This is $50 million. And outside money that was spent against me. And that's an experience that also uniquely prepares me for this campaign. A lot is real hypothetical right now when it comes to how will you navigate a general election for other candidates. A lot is hypothetical in terms of what will that approach be. And having come out on both sides, because in 2018, that race was decided by 1 point when we took on and defeated Scott Walker. Mm-hmm. A feat that no one else has any no one has nearly that level of campaign experience, and coming up short just 1 point. I know both experiences, and I know which one feels better. But I could also tell you, you know, you learn a little bit more sometimes in the races that you lose, because when you win, you think you've done everything right, and if you come up short, you got 26,000 what ifs. And that's every single morning. That's what gets me motivated every day.
So if you get elected governor, let's pretend for a second that you have a magic wand and you can, it doesn't matter who lives in the legislature, you can get one thing done for the people of Wisconsin. What's the one thing you would really want to get done if you had a magic wand in Wisconsin?
The office of governor doesn't come with a magic wand.
Well, it sort of does with the veto pen.
So there are two answers to this question. And, you know, not trying to cop out, but, you know, I've been very explicit and very direct about the need for us to expand healthcare in Wisconsin. We are one of 10 states, and there's no reason that people are paying so much more for the health insurance premiums, no reason people continue to accumulate medical debt and ultimately medical bankruptcy for a lot of people. I think we make ourselves much more healthy as a state. I think we make ourselves a much more desirable place to live, work, and raise a family, to attract new business owners. I think that having a public option for Badger Care goes a long way to making Wisconsin a much more habitable place for success. Now, that is you know, one answer. And the other answer is truly seeing through the work of our climate change task force. You know, that's what I spent the most time on during my time in public office. And I want to see that work get pushed through. I want to see us on an accelerated path to 100% renewable energy. I want to see us use every opportunity we can to green up our infrastructure. I want us to use every opportunity we can to push for more net zero schools around Wisconsin. And the potentials, the opportunities are limitless. We also get a chance to create good paying jobs. In addition to saving the planet, we have a chance to make sure that Wisconsin is on track to becoming the outdoor recreational capital of the world, which is a side quest of mine. And I'll limit that. The world is big, so I'll settle for North America.
How, on the climate, what I don't understand is how do we possibly hit that goal of carbon neutral by 2050 if we're adding data centers that, for example, the one in DeForest, it was turned down, but it was going to double potentially the amount of power from electricity that we were using in Dane County. So how does that add up? How do we allow data centers but still hit that goal?
So I'm glad that you brought that up, because one thing, I just had a conversation on the phone, not about DeForest specifically, but about Iowa, because Iowa is a net exporter of energy because of wind. And there is the potential for them to add new gas plants online to address the data centers, to power the data centers. I can't tell you a more messed up proposition when so many communities across this state, across this country, have not just made pledges, but made strides to get us to 100% renewable energy, 100% clean energy, or 100% or net zero emissions. And we're faced down with this threat here. And it is big tech, it's these social media companies who've gotten over on us every step of the way, and they've escaped accountability. And this is the physical manifestation of it. The data centers are doing more harm than good. And I can tell you right now, there will be no new data center construction that cannot meet the very direct needs that communities have. If you are polluting the water, if you are polluting the air, if you can't meet a renewable energy standard, and if you are not being a good neighbor by taking in community input and putting forth a community visit benefits agreement, you can't be built in Wisconsin. And, you know, there are a lot of conversations about, you know, what people want to do. But the reality is, I don't care if it takes 1 year, I don't care if it takes 5 years. If you can't meet a set of standards that makes sure Wisconsinites are protected, that makes sure that our natural resources are protected, you don't belong in Wisconsin.
Are you going to support wind and solar powers throughout the state of Wisconsin, even though so many neighbors are opposed to them being sited in their neighborhoods?
I'll tell you, a lot of the opposition is based on disinformation, you know, but as I mentioned, even with data centers, community input is key. And I think it's wrong to impose anything on a community that doesn't want it, but also want to make sure that communities have the right information. You have a president that said windmills cause cancer. So let's just, you know, consider where a lot of this, where a lot of the mistrust has been generated from. A lot of people who feel as if, you know, there are certain land use opportunities that will be taken away if there is solar or wind sited. But I can tell you at the same time, there is development that makes a lot of land completely unusable on much of our farmland, which is also a trend that we need to rein in as well. So I do look forward to coming up with the best solutions. And obviously that won't just be me. We want input from communities when it comes to wind and solar, because what I can tell you, as communities face ever increasing energy costs, they're looking for a way out, looking for some relief. And the more energy we can generate here in Wisconsin, the better off everyone is. And, you know, there's a little push and pull there, but we want to ultimately ensure that, you know, people are not being taken advantage of. And that's a pretty universal standard, whether it's data centers or whether it's doing something positive.
On affordability, the average home now in Madison is over $500,000. What would you do as governor, particularly for young people trying to get into the housing market in a expensive place like Dean County? What would you do to help them accomplish a home or a condo?
Well, a couple of things that are going wrong. One is the fact that we aren't building enough homes. We also need more housing density. You know, you mentioned Madison, even Milwaukee. I think we have the first condominium proposal in over a decade, almost two decades, actually. So being able to build more dense housing will help alleviate some of the pressures. But going back to the story, even about my grandfather, right, when I talked about the middle class foundation he was able to create, he never set foot on a college campus until it was time for my dad and his brother to graduate. But he was able to purchase a home with high school diploma. And you think about the people right now in my age group, people who are younger than me, with college degrees, with advanced degrees, who are still struggling to purchase that first home. That speaks to the problem of the situation that we're in. And we have a lot of Wall Street showing up, buying properties in mass. I'm not sure if it's happening as much in Madison as it is in Milwaukee, because, you know, certainly a number more vacancies in the city of Milwaukee. And they are taking advantage of a bad situation and pushing potential buyers out of the market every single day. And we have to get Wall Street out of the picture. We have to ban private equity from being able to just gobble up homes and these out-of-state landlords that are making it more difficult for people. And we also need to, you know, look at some things that have been working. I was talking with some members of the credit union league, and they talked about the programs that they have with Habitat for Humanity, as an example, where they're able to offer a certain number of low interest loans to first time home buyers that meet income guidelines. Now, this is one area that gets a little bit tricky, because you get people who are ready to buy a home, people who might, you know, be able to do so, but they fall outside of the margins where they make too much money to qualify for a number of these programs, but not enough money to be able to afford that down payment. And that's where we have to be able to close the gap. So I will look forward to working with our credit unions, other institutions, but more specifically, the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Development Authority. I think that WEDA has a prime opportunity to step in to provide low interest loans to first time home buyers, especially if we are targeting some communities that are in need of growth. Some of our communities across the state that are in need of teachers, that are in need of nurses, that are in need of other medical professionals. I think there's a real world where we can offer low interest loans to get people in these communities.
Sounds good. So tomorrow we're publishing a letter to the editor in the State Journal calling on the candidates for governor to pledge to pardon the activists who broke into the Ridgeland Farms to save the dogs at the breeding facility in Mount Horeb. Have you heard about this issue at all?
I've heard about the issue for sure.
So if you're elected, would you pardon the activists who are being charged from criminal charges right now?
Well, I would want to hear the stories, because, like, you know, we do have to, you know, think about criminal damage to property. But I'm happy to have that conversation. That's not a conversation I'm closed off to.
What do you say to Democrats in this crowd? Well, it's somewhat crowded. It's not as crowded as it was in terms of this race, but what do you say to Democrats who say, hey, Mandela, we like you, but you had your shot against Ron Johnson. You lost. Give somebody else a shot.
Well, the thing about it, you know, when you're running for any office, there's no waiting list. And I can tell you right now that there's not a single person running who has put in the effort that I put in, not just for myself. There's not a single person running who's helped more candidates get elected than I have. There's not a candidate who's been more invested in the cause that I have. And I truly, you know, I respect people's decisions. And yeah, that's the reason you have primaries, to figure out who you like best and who to put forward. And I can tell you, there's not a single person that's going to outwork me. And having put up that race that I put up, despite being massively outspent in a world, in an election cycle, where I was the only one who was left out to dry, as the target of the largest super PAC in this country, with its focus on any one particular Democratic candidate, I can tell you that I went through that race and I came out much stronger. And ultimately, coming up 1 point short in 2022 is what has uniquely prepared me for this moment. I know exactly what I'm up against, and I know how we're going to get the job done. And I just want to say a debt of gratitude is owed to the volunteers who showed up. We built the largest volunteer base, the largest grassroots donor base. Not a single person in this state has raised more money than I have without taking a dime of corporate PAC money. It takes real effort. And when you take on tough fights, there's always a chance that you come up short. And the experience of coming up short in 2022 is what gives me the firepower and what gives me the resolve to ensure that we keep this governor's office in Democratic hands. And most importantly, that we're ready to go with real urgency on day one. I am the candidate that offers that. I am the candidate who is prepared to show up and make it happen.
So you've talked a lot about 2022 and that very narrow loss to Ron Johnson. What would you change about that campaign? What would you do? What would you do different? What lessons did you learn?
Well, if I had the magic wand, I would get big money out of politics, ban super PACs. You know, there would have been parity. I raised more money than Senator Johnson, actually. So again, that super PAC spending, this is one of the biggest challenges we have. And there were folks who counted me out from the start. But the people who knew I could win were Republican billionaires. And that's why they put as much money into that campaign as possible. But, you know, week after the election, I've shared this story many times over. I talked to, you know, Barack Obama, and he mentioned the work that he did after losing his race for Congress. And ultimately, it was about sticking to it, getting back to my roots in organizing, making sure we're showing up even more places. And I was, you know, this race was the closest challenge to any incumbent. Not a single incumbent lost statewide across the country, just to add even more perspective of the uphill climb. But I can tell you that it's a fight that I would take on every single day, because those tough fights are worth fighting. And this cycle, we get to do more on the ground, grassroots organizing, showing up directly in communities, communicating directly with voters, and sharing our message about how this broken system has to be fixed to improve quality of life for everybody.
Tom Tiffany, if you do win, he's going to, as you know, he's going to say you're an extremist and not a fan of the police. Will you spend more money on the police or less money on the police when you're governor?
So look, we're not taking any money away from police departments. And, you know, these are the things that the mistruths that they will use to hide, you know, their malfeasance, will hide their own record when it comes to, you know, improving people's living conditions and public safety. This is something that is very important to me. I've been very open about my own stories, having lost friends to gun violence in high school, and more than I care to count. And this is an issue, this is a pain that's felt by so many people across the state. Public safety is a number one priority of mine. It has been, and it's very disingenuous when you get people like Tom Tiffany who will say whatever to lie and distract from their own record. But I do also want to make sure that we are talking about root causes, that we're doing everything we can to prevent crime from happening in the first place. And it feels like that's not a conversation people like Tom Tiffany want to have. Tom Tiffany would rather show up and over-police and put more people behind bars, my plan, what I have always sought to do, what I've always fought for, is to make sure that people's living conditions was to a standard that crime itself would be less of an option. And that's something that is absolutely worth fighting for, fully funding our schools, making sure they're good paying jobs and communities, and also ensuring that people have access to healthcare resources, mental and physical health. And when people have their needs met, generally speaking, you see fewer instances of crime. But when that crime does happen, you have to be able to respond appropriately.
So you've been all over the state as a candidate for governor, as lieutenant governor, as candidate for Senate. Where's one place in Wisconsin that maybe folks in Madison haven't heard about that we got to go check out sometime? Where's your Discover Wisconsin moment?
I mean, on a personal level, I mean, the Elroy Sparta bike trail. That's just on a personal note.
That's great, yeah.
Well, it's very scenic. You're a runner too, aren't you? I've seen you at a couple races.
Yeah, I do. I do tend to run.
What do you run the 5K or a marathon or what?
I got I think I have 10 marathons under my belt now.
Whoa. What's your PR?
3:15.
Well, that's moving.
In Detroit.
Phil, that's faster than you.
It's a lot faster than me, Scott.
And I've never run one. So.
But I got into triathlons a few years ago.
And how'd that go?
I enjoyed it. I did pretty well in my age group, actually. I qualified for the USA Triathlon National Championships last year, and I participated. I did Ironman Wisconsin in 2024, which is one of the most difficult Ironman courses in the world, and it was a good time.
So age and health are not an issue for you?
Knocking on wood.
How about your favorite supper club in Wisconsin?
Favorite supper club in Wisconsin Dells? I went to House of Embers earlier this year, which is...
I like House of Embers. There's a room there named after a famous actor. I can't think of it. But yeah, it's right across the street from Jimmy's Del Bar. That's my favorite.
Yeah, it's right across the street from Del Bar. And I went to House of Embers and
House of Embers.
I'm gonna tell you, great staff. So I hope they're listening. Real great.
It's got kind of some Vegas seating.
Yeah.
Like slightly seedy, but not too bad.
Dude, I'm here for it, man.
The Valentino room. That's what it was called. Yeah. He didn't eat in the Valentino
room. No, I didn't eat in the Valentino room. I ate in the big space.
Well, hey, thanks for participating with us. If you win the nomination, we definitely want to have you back on and meet our editorial board. Best of luck to you, Mandela.
Awesome.
And go out and get them.
Hey, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Good to see you.
Our theme music is by Tube Tester.